Oh, baby, we ready. It's been a hot, hot minute.
1 minute later.
Oh, can we restart? We need to restart.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Mitts and Twigs podcast. I'm here with my good friend, Ty. We had a nice little week off where we get to take that weekend to ourselves. We didn't have to think about the podcast. I myself came back energized, amped up, ready to go. Unfortunately, Ty, I think you caught a little something from the gang at work.
Yeah, caught a little something, a little bit of sniffle. So sorry if you can hear it in the pod. I apologize for that. I'm going to resist the sniffles the best I can. But you know what? I'm happy to be with you here, Matty.
Well, we appreciate having you. I know I personally love the time. So it's great to have you back here, even if it's a little bit less than 100%. So, gang, with that extra break, we really wanted to make sure that we had enough time to put forward what we are going to be calling the Mitts and Twigs Trade Spectacular. Now, I know what you're thinking. What is a trade spectacular? Well, if you just hold on a second, I will explain it to you. That's why you don't interrupt until the end. No need to bicker. Let's move on. Trade spectacular is when we are going to tell you all our takes for the losers and the winners of the trade deadline, if there are any. So we've kind of looked at some of the teams. We're not going to go through all the trades exhaustively. Let's be honest. There was a whole lot of shuffling going around. Not a lot of bangers out there, but there were some teams that did especially well and some that maybe did not. So I think that's what we're really going to get into today. Ty, how did you feel looking at this? How did you feel overall after trade deadline this year?
I think this trade deadline, there was a lot of sellers. So and not that many buyers. I feel like it was a different type of market this year. I was intrigued because there were so many deals that like led up to the trade deadline. I was like, there's no way there can be like, it's just a plethora of deals that are just sitting there waiting for, you know, we had Giroux move before, Toffoli, all a lot of big names. And I think you and I are going to count them in as the trade deadline because basically that. But I was a little bit nervous that'd be let down. I kind of feel like it was a letdown. Prices were insane. If you were a seller, you did really well. And if you were selling a defenseman, you did really well. So it's always entertaining. You know, I sent out a tweet yesterday about how hard this probably is for the families and all that. And it really is, right? Like, I couldn't imagine like working on my job. And then all of a sudden one day my boss comes in. He's like, hey, you've just been shipped across the country. Pack up stuff, kiss your daughter goodbye, and figure it out later. So for pure entertainment, you always enjoy it. But for the families, you feel for them a bit.
Yeah, it's important to point that out, I think, and I appreciate you bringing that up, the human side to all this. It gets exciting on the fan side of that little bit of that Christmas morning, like what's exciting little package prize do you have waiting for you, or what move is your team going to make to get somebody out of there that you've always hated and get something for him. But, you know, these are men with families that, you know, it's not easy for them. It's not easy for those around them and for the children especially. So, yeah, it's great to taper that a little bit before, especially before we get real silly and real stupid with this episode. So, yeah, I think, like you're saying, this year, if you were selling or if you're selling a left defenseman, you'd name your price. It was crazy what we saw out there. And I think that's part of the reason that it was such a weird trade deadline is that it seemed like, and rather than like everybody out there just trying to get different things, a lot of the market was after either the same player or players or the same position. And it's a weird year because of, you know, the cap isn't going to go up by much. People are still navigating all of that. And yeah, I think teams are getting a little bit more sensitive and a lot of teams don't have the room to make any big moves. So we'll get into a little bit more of that as we get into it. But without further ado, let's kick off the first annual Mitts and Twigs Trade Spectacular. Yeah, how do you like that? Pretty hot, right?
I'm here for that. I'm just here for the now it has to happen every year. I'm ready for it.
I can't wait. Doug, I'm gonna start us off if you don't mind. Gang, we're going to try to get through about three winners, three losers each. Ty and I haven't communicated on what teams we were going to talk about before this. So there's going to be some, chuckles. There might be some reaching here and there to fill this all out. But I want to go first because I want to have a certain level of transparency and honesty with you, the fans of the NHL and of us. First loser I have on the list is unfortunately my beloved Blue Note. St. Louis Blues are losers on this deadline. In terms of trades this season, this really hurts. Our defense is lacking. It has been since we let Petro walk. And I understand why we let Petro walk, but we didn't replace him then. We didn't replace him now. We got Nick Leddy that I think I'm not that upset that we got Nick Leddy. I think at least he's a guy that has some experience, that has won a cup, should be a good ad. But, you know, if you follow Jay Fresh anywhere, he had some pretty scathing things. I think something about drags down the team's results at both ends of the ice was his summary. Obviously not flattering. And even what we paid for him, Oscar Sundquist, kind of a beloved St. Louis Blue, a young guy. I get it. I get why we would move him. He's basically not a top six forward for us right now, probably won't be in the future. And he's getting a couple mil. So makes sense to move him out for something. But Wallman, I think the young defenseman, again, another guy that's not really cracking the lineup, not really committing or having the impact that we need. Fair enough. But a second round pick. Oh, I mean, when you compare it to some of the price tags other defensemen went for yesterday, it's not as bad, but it's still an overpayment. The Blues didn't get any of the coveted guys. They really, arguably, didn't really fill the position that they needed. And even the lone shred of silver lining in the kind of cap relief, because we did end up saving, I think, $750,000 in this deal, is completely washed out by losing a second round pick. It hurts, but the Blues on this day, losers.
Yeah, I totally understand why you would put them as a loser. I don't think Nick Leddy, I think there's a few shockers, and that price was a shocker for sure. I didn't have the Blues in my loser, but I did have a juggernaut in my losers. Let's see what I did there. Blues, not juggernaut. The Colorado Avalanche, to me,
oh baby,
are coming out of this as the biggest loser. They were in on every big name. I think they were down to the wire in Giroux, and Giroux chose Florida. I don't blame them. That team's rolling and that weather's nice, right? Also, I think the taxes are pretty good there. So you come out of it and you pay Justin Barron and you pay a second round pick for Lehkonen, and that's really all you get. Goaltending still suspect. It really is. I love Kemper. I really think he's good, even though, you know, the injuries concern me. I think they were in on Fleury. I think they were in on a lot of things. They were in on D. Oh, they did add Josh Manson too, which was huge. But I still think that I think this is an all or nothing year. And I think if you were to sit Joe Sakic down, I think that he was going for a big fish and he didn't really get a big fish. I think he stole Josh Manson to a really good price. I just think of where they were supposed to be. I don't think he reached the goals, especially in this isn't a win now year with all these contracts, like McKinnon's going to be paid in 2 years. So yeah, I have the Colorado Avalanche as my first loser.
Yeah. Damn. I don't think they're on either of my lists, but I think I toyed with them maybe going on the winners list because I thought they had some value picks without giving up too much, especially looking at the rest of the market. That the Manson pickup was golden compared to what everybody else paid for defense. So
doesn't Manson, I'm pretty sure, have a no trade, and I'm pretty sure he could choose where he wanted to go. And that kind of goes in with the price as well.
Yeah.
Let me double check really quick as you're explaining your next loser here, but I'm pretty positive that's what happened.
Well, geez, I got to tell you guys, in preparation for this, because I knew there was a possibility that Ty and I would have some crossover, I put together a little bit of a list, and I'm having trouble selecting which one was the worst. But you know what? I'm going to go with this one. It was the first person, the first team that came to mind. And if I'm being honest, it's the team that got me the most fired up looking at this idea. Blues bummed me out a little bit, but as I said, I think they're losers overall, but it wasn't the worst thing that they could have done. To me, I think arguably the biggest losers on trade day, and I don't know, this entire season, Seattle Kraken. This is a team that, when they did their expansion draft, prioritized a lot of young players, especially. They were way under the cap because they stayed away from the high-priced players that everybody else, fans, myself, Twigs, we all expected them to go after some of these high-priced players and then flip them at the trade deadline. No, that's not what we're doing here in Seattle. We're building something here in Seattle. We want all these young guys, all this talent. We want to build something special. Trade deadline comes around. What do? They trade a bunch of their players. They trade the only guy that can get any kind of a real value on, Gio. And Gio goes for, I don't want to say cheap, but other guys out there were going for first round picks. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many seconds, first round picks. They don't equate like that. That's a much better option to me. So I feel like he, after some of the better or other options were gone, he still only got that for Gio. When a couple teams were super desperate for players at the end, he traded away like Mason Appleton, just a bunch of like fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh round picks. And now they're all excited because they've got 25 picks in the next 2 years that they can use to swing in deals. What are you doing? Are you just trying to make the most pathetic franchise in hockey? I mean, I didn't think anybody could come close to what Arizona's been doing, but in no time at all, Seattle's done the reverse Vegas, where instead of being a contender right away, they are one of the worst teams, top to bottom, in the league. Easy. You don't even get me started on the fact that arguably their best player and their top scorer, Jared McCann, is getting buried for no reason. That's a guy. Free him. Trade him. Somebody trade him to a contender. They'd be killing it. He's this close to being a superstar, and they don't see it for whatever reason. They have just the nicest team management, and I mean that in the most insulting way possible. Just a bunch of dummy nice guys that don't have an ounce of win in them. To me, I'm not kidding. Like, I'm fired up. Seattle Kraken are the biggest losers on trade day and on every day of this NHL season.
You're going to be pissed when you hear my winners. I'll save my Seattle take for a little bit later in the show. I understand what you're doing, saying completely. You know, especially when you see now the season Vladimir Tarasenko's had. The ask for Calgary to keep Giordano was like a first and a second. It was just crazy high. And Calgary already offered before that probably a couple seconds. I don't know what Ron Francis is doing. I do know that for some reason the analytical world of hockey thought the Seattle Kraken would be a playoff team over the likes of the LA Kings, over the likes of the Calgary Flames. Like, they were projected higher points at the start of the year, which never really made sense to me. And I think that's where you have to be careful analytically, especially with the eye test and everything like that. You got some guys that, you know, career highs are not that high, and there's no real superstar, as much as you want to play in the defensive end and sign Grubauer to your stupid contract and stuff.
Oh my God, the Grubauer contract. In a year where six teams are desperate for any kind of breathing, living goaltender, No one's going to trade for this guy because they sent him to a million years and like $6 million a year almost. Like, they put themselves in, they built their team one way, and then they completely changed what they were trying to do in the mid-year, and they weren't equipped for it. They're playing real hockey the way I play fantasy hockey. And it's not good, people. That's not successful.
Yeah. I definitely think it's going to be a long road for Seattle. I get expectations when you're a new team and you just watch Vegas go to Stanley Cup final. That doesn't happen. Like, that just doesn't happen. That was the first time in years, and the rules were made for Vegas. Teams are going to adapt. They don't want to get fleeced like they were. Ron Francis really did a poor job in understanding that, and especially drafting. You look at the Dylan deal, and this has now turned more into like how this franchise has been run the first, what, 7 months of its existence in the NHL. It starts at, you know, drafting Dylan or not drafting Dylan, and then all of a sudden he gets moved to Washington for 2 seconds, right? Like Winnipeg, 2 seconds. It all works that way. And Ron Francis has failed at every level. I will say that there's a couple of trades that Ron Francis fleeced a few teams. I guess when you make that many deals, you'll be a couple winners in a few of them. But I don't know. I don't have them as my loser. I think I'm going to go a different direction here. I'm going to pick a team that is in a win now situation. They have the two best players in the world. They have a top nine that should be feared by every team. And they have one of the worst defensive cores and two of the worst goalies. That's the Edmonton Oilers. I feel for the Edmonton Oilers. I'm a Flames fan. I love the Battle of Alberta. I love what they are. I love that the new coach has finally gotten to play good 5-on-5. But at the end of the day, you're going to roll into the playoffs with Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith. And when you look at San Jose adding Kaapo Kähkönen from Minnesota for a steal, you wonder, Ken Holland, where you at? You know what I mean? Like, I get that Middleton went back and it was a fifth, but at the end of the day, you decided that the best move for you was to spend a second on Brett Kulak and a prospect, like a roster player, and a second round pick for Brett Kulak. You were talking about the Blues overspending on Nick Leddy. We're talking about a 6'7" D man that Montreal claimed off waivers from Calgary that's played well. But at the end of the day, does that move the needle? Who are you taking out? You taking out Keith? No, you can't take out Keith. Are you taking out Tyson Barrie? Well, you sure look like an idiot. You just gave him a contract extension. Are you taking out Chris Russell? Heck, I was talking to a couple of Oilers fans. I don't know how they like Chris Russell. They all say, oh, he blocks a ton of shots. That means you're playing in your end a lot. Like, you're not getting out of your end, right? I think as the highest paid GM, and we can crap on Ron Francis all we want, and rightfully so, Ken Holland's the highest paid GM and has failed this team every level. They got lucky with Evander Kane because he's a douchebag and he did some criminal things and his contract got void, right? Zach Hyman was an overpayment. In 2 years, you're going to hate that. You address the holes you have. You have the two best players plus RNH, plus Zach Hyman, plus Yamamoto, plus Puljujärvi. That team is built to win. And I just think that, and I think what triggered me the most was Kaapo Kähkönen going to San Jose. Like, if you know what your hole is, even like the New York Rangers were asking for a fourth round pick for Georgiev, and the Edmonton Oilers didn't like his personality or something because he was a bad locker room guy in New York because he's not going to be in a starter right now. You can fix that because he'd be the best goalie on your team right now. You wanted to freaking buy Korpisalo from Columbus, who I think averages like over 3 goals a game. The Edmonton Oilers are a sure loser this offseason. Everybody's like, oh, their biggest ad is RNH will be healthy. Their biggest ad is Evander Kane. Their biggest ad is just being healthy. Like, that's no, every team is going to be healthy at a certain point. That's not an ad. You're supposed to, like, you're going to go through these waves. Help those two win a cup. Like, and I just think Ken Holland's sleeping on the job.
Yeah. No, I think you laid it out well. I think we've railed into Edmonton earlier this year, and I think it comes back to the fact that there's something else going on there, whether it's the ownership, whether it's the star players. I'm not trying to throw any support on Ken Holland's way, because you laid out a beautiful case for why he was crazily ineffective this season for this stuff. But Chiarelli had had success elsewhere, and he flamed out hard there. No one goes there and has had success. No management has had success there while they've had the best player in the world and possibly the second best player in the world. So it's completely possible that they keep hiring idiots, but it's pretty weird to see people that have at the very least moderately successful track records coming into Edmonton and then just completely falling apart. Eventually it's, you know, there's a bigger problem there, but you're right. I mean, the Minnesota Wild, who I don't even know how I feel about what they did. They traded Kaapo Kähkönen away and a fifth round pick. They gave up a fifth round pick and the goaltender at 25 years old for a player that I don't think he's even on their roster right now. I don't think he's probably not going to start a single game this season.
Middleton, defenseman? Yeah, I don't know much about him.
No, I was looking into it. I was like, he looks like he's a depth guy that if somebody gets dinged up, they might put him in there. They might give him a shot or they might put him down in the AHL for their post. I don't know. But yeah, it's insane how much there was out there and how little Edmonton achieved.
Yeah, like it's just weird to me. Like, okay, I get it. You're not going to get Marc-Andre Fleury. Why would he waive his no move clause to come to Edmonton, where you know that team, he's going to be just like in the media all the time. If any loss, it's going to be his fault. You just look at what the Edmonton media did to Devan Dubnyk, what they did to Cam Talbot after playing him 70-something games in a year. And then he had a bad year the next year because he's just been like exhausted, right? Like the media is hard on the goalies up there, but the best example I can say is the Flames were never consistent. They always were that mediocre team, never really good. And then you get a good goalie like Jacob Markstrom, right? Problems disappear. Look at St. Louis. They have two solid goalies. We might not like Binnington as a person, right? Or like his actions when he's like in the moment. But those are two solid goalies. Edmonton, you're going into the playoffs with one of the best offensive cores and one of the worst defensive and goaltending duos in the NHL. Like, I'd rather have Gillies than Mike Smith. Like, Mike Smith is that bad. He's a below 900 save percentage. I don't know what his goals against is off the top of my head, but I don't know. I get it. Ken Holland likes a battler. Maybe that's all it is. But on to the third one there, Maddie. I didn't think I'd get fired up, and I got fired up, and I don't even like the Oilers. That's the amazing part.
I think I got a tough one for this year. I don't know. You know what? I got to say, I think one of my biggest losers, and this might sound crazy, is the Florida Panthers. What? Yeah. Now I know.
That's a hot take.
I understand. But they got in some of the top free agents. They got Claude Giroux and arguably at a discount because it sounded like Colorado maybe offered more, but he preferred to go there. Totally get it. They got Chara, so and everybody wanted him. Whether or not he was worth that price, they paid it. And other teams would have as well. But who did they get? They brought in Hag, I think, as well.
Yeah, they got Sherratt, Hag, Giroux, and they ate money for Max Domi on that contract. What else did they do?
They shipped out Vetrano. They shipped out Vetrano.
Vetrano, yeah.
This is what I'm saying here. We talked about this not that long ago. When was the last time a team made a huge splash at the free agent deadline and it worked out? It doesn't happen. You don't win the Stanley Cup by bringing in a big stud or a bunch of key pieces like that. This late in the season, there's 20 games left. This is a team that's been one of the best in the league all year. That's been rolling, just rolling. Now, somebody might say, even granted all that, like, you've got to replace Ekblad in some way because he's probably gone for a stretch. And I would grant you that, but they were in on defense before he went down. So they were looking to upgrade before he went down. So now you've got a first-time head coach who came in halfway through the year, or a third of the way through the year. You've got a relatively inexperienced team with little to no postseason success experience to speak of. You've got your stud defender down. You brought in a couple of new guys that are going to change the dynamic and change the way that people are going to get moved around. The new guys don't have any Stanley Cups to share, as far as I'm remembering. I don't know. I don't know that Florida had much better options in terms of bringing things in, but I really think that in my eyes, Florida is actually less likely to win the Stanley Cup now. I think that they went all in for this year. They're committing. And so if I was a Panthers fan, I think I'd maybe tell myself, I'd be like, all right, we're going in, we're all in. But they gave up a lot for the future. And I don't know, quite frankly, I don't think it's going to pan out. And I think Drew walks next year, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's done after this year. So, I don't have the Florida Panthers as my biggest winner or my top three winners. I have the Florida Panthers as probably a pass, like probably a B. I think if you were to just take the Robert Haig deal and you were to take just the Giroux deal, I'd say, yeah, that's a winner, right? I hate the Sherratt deal. I absolutely, and we'll get more into Montreal a little bit later, but a first round pick for Sherratt is just insane to me. Like, and it was a big deal. And for some reason, he was one of the biggest fish.
Mm-hmm.
I understand your take, because I said it too, in where usually the guy that adds the biggest fish doesn't usually win. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like, I want to believe in my heart. I think Claude Giroux is a good guy and all that. And I think that's a great ad. And looking at the power play that they ran this morning, it's insane. Like, it's all forwards. There's no D-man. My bigger concern is Aaron Ekblad and trying to replace Aaron Ekblad with Ben Sherratt and Robert Haig. That is my biggest concern. I think I watched the Florida Panthers game. I think it was yesterday or it was the night day before. Like, their D is suspect.
Yeah.
Without Ekblad, their D is suspect. And sorry, Ben Sherratt isn't any more like suspect. He's not that great. Hate to say it, but it like it just is. And Robert Haig is a good depth defenseman. So really, if you look at it on paper, you added Claude Giroux and lost Aaron Ekblad. Aaron Ekblad might come back in the late first round or the early second round if they make it, right? That's just a huge loss. So I didn't put them with one of the best, but yeah, I totally get your take on that. I understand it. It sucks because they have burned. Like, let's look through their picks here really quick. It is insane. Like, last year, they spent a second and a third on Sam Bennett, which turned out to be a steal, right? They don't have a first this year. They don't have a second this year. They don't have a first next year. They don't have a third in 2 years. They don't have a first in 3 years. And they don't have a second in 3 years. That's 3 years of, like, top prospects. I get it. You're drafting probably anywhere in the 20th to the 32nd. That's a lot of top prospects, and you better be going for it, especially when you know Giroux isn't coming back.
Yeah, well, that's it. What happens next year when Giroux doesn't come back? How do you have somebody lined up to fill that hole, because you can't draft for them anymore, and you don't have much to trade with anymore unless you want to start trading out like 2027 first round picks? You know, you're still tied to Bobrovsky for another 10 years, I think. And it's awesome that he's having a great year, but this is the best year he's had in like 4 or 5. So yeah, that's a huge contract. That's a big contract. Yeah,
$10 million for 4 years after this year, right? So
yeah. I don't know. I get that it's a hot take, and it's definitely not probably what anybody else is talking about, but
hot take.
I'm telling you, the Panthers are not better than they were a month ago. I'd argue that what they gained in like overall talent on paper, they've destroyed in chemistry. So
Yeah, we'll definitely see, because you've now taken Bennett off the first line power play. I know he's floated up in a bit, like him and Reinhardt have switched. It's going to be interesting to see where it is. I still, like, this is their D right now, and this is the bigger issue. The chemistry, I think, will be fine. I think, I don't know, but I this is the issue. Brandon Montour, Mackenzie Weegar, who's a stud, Forsling, Gudas, Haig, Lindblom, and Carlson, Lucas Carlson. Like, that's not a great defensive core. You know what I mean? They're four offensive lines, deadly, as deep as anybody in the NHL. You know, adding Giroux does help that. But yeah, I don't know. That decor is scary. That's a scary decor. Oh, and Schrott's in there as well.
Yeah.
Hurt at the moment, but yeah.
Oh, that's great. They spent a ton of money on a banged up defenseman. Swartz.
Yeah, he got hurt right before, and that kind of like made everybody worried, but I don't understand the Ben Schrott. If we want to just talk about like just the crappiest deal, it's Ben Schrott. I don't understand. And I can't wait to get into the winners, because I can't understand anybody that would pay that price for Ben Schrott.
Give us wrap us up with the loser category.
All right. This one's going to hurt here. I know we have like one of our favorite people on Twitter, and we have a lot of Bruins fans that listen. I think the Boston Bruins are losers.
Yes. I was going to throw them out as an honorable mention. If you didn't, please go on.
Like, I love Hampus Lindholm. I love Hampus Lindholm. I think he's a solid defenseman. Is Hampus Lindholm the same guy when he was like a coveted prospect and like up and coming D-man? No, he's kind of plateaued. And he must have plateaued enough for, you know, the Ducks to move on. The negotiations did not go well. And his contract is quite big, right? You gave up a first, a second, and a second, and none of them are protected. There's no conditions on them. You just gave them straight up picks. I get it. You're in a win now mode. I understand that, but man, that's a lot for one guy. Like, yep. That's a lot for one guy. Like, and yeah, I just don't know. And then you extended him for 8 more years. He'll be 36 when that contract's done. Like, does that make any sense? To me, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I could see if at Hampus Lindholm, and there was a lot of Flames ties, and I was like, oh man, I really want Hampus Lindholm. Like, he's a, you know, average defenseman, probably a 4, maybe a 3, but he's not top 2. He's not going to play on your top pair. I think he's awesome. And then you see the price and you're like, oh, thank dear Lord. You know, I'm not a religious man, but I'm praying that like we don't spend that amount of picks on a player, right? Like, that's crazy. Yeah. So no, I especially with like, I guess they did get term because it was they signed him to a 6-year deal, or what was it, 8-year contract or 6-year contract?
I think it was 8, because he was supposed to be, yeah, that's 8. 9 years left of contract now.
That's just crazy. So that's my third loser, and they really didn't do anything else. They did sign Jake DeBrusk to an okay deal, $4 million. I'm sure he's not going to last after the playoffs. He'll be moved at the deadline. Teams seem to be more comfortable, especially with this weird cap that's not going up thanks to COVID and the world and all that kind of stuff, to pay for players with term. Does that make sense? So, yeah, I don't know. The Bruins are my loser. Third loser.
100%. I was looking down at my list because there was a couple teams left on there, and I thought, well, you know, they get a pass. But I was like, if Ty doesn't mention it, I'm just going to say shout out Bruins, honorable mention for filling a hole that didn't exist on their team with a player that they doesn't help really help them, doesn't get them, in my mind, it doesn't get them closer to being competitive, because it's not where they were missing anything. And then the Jake DeBrusk thing, I don't know. I don't have any good feelings about that. It feels very smoke and mirrors bullcrap to me.
Yeah.
The idea that, like, how do you on one hand say we're signing this guy, he still wants to be traded, he's signed the contract because teams are nervous about it because it's going to be an RFA or whatever, yada, yada, yada. You just traded for a guy and paid a ton for him and then immediately signed him to a long-term deal. And why? Because when you had a deal in place with Anaheim, they allowed you to speak to his agent and put the idea together. Why is it that teams don't want to trade for Jake DeBrusk? Because Because why? Because he's telling them straight up, I'm not signing a long-term deal. Probably not, because he just signed a deal.
Yeah.
So what were the Bruins doing? Getting in their own way there? Like, that's the only thing I can assume. Who's looking at Jake DeBrusk and they're afraid that they're going to trade for him and he's going to turn around and ask for $10 million? Like, this, to me, I don't know. It's a very, very weird, very uncomfortable situation.
Yeah, Jake DeBrusk at $4 million is about as high as you want to go with Jake DeBrusk, to be honest, right? Like,
who couldn't sign that contract?
It is a good contract for Jake in the sense that at 27, which is usually when forwards get into their prime, right?
Yeah.
He'll be a UFA.
Yeah.
Like, that's so good on Jake for a guy that wants, you know, he's announced that he wants out of Boston. He seems like he's been a real team guy. He's had a better year this season. Him and Dylan Strome have, like, kept playing even though they asked for trades. So, yeah, I don't know. It felt flat for me. I felt a lot for Lindholm. I like Lindholm, but that felt like a lot. Even the Sherratt deal, even though he's a better defenseman, but still, yeah, I have the Boston Bruins as my third loser.
Yeah, I had the same thoughts you had with the Blues. I was like, I know we need to add a piece defensively, and there are defensemen out there that could help us, but all the discussed price tags were insane. So I would kind of resign myself that I, rather than the Blues overpay for something that's not going to really help, let's just roll it in there and hope for the best, because we'll be in a better position for it next year. But yeah, we didn't escape unscathed. So
it's true.
On to the winners. That's something a little more positive. I think something that I had a lot of fun dumping on the Kraken. I think it's going to become one of my new favorite hobbies. But a little bit less complaining. Let's talk about the winners. Who do you got, Ty? Who's your first winner? Not necessarily the biggest, but who's your first winner that comes to mind?
So I really wanted to put, we touched about him earlier. I really wanted to touch on, Seattle, and I really wanted to touch on Minnesota. But I think who comes ahead of them just by a slight is the Calgary Flames. I think for the first time in Brad Treliving's tenure there, right? So it's like almost 8 years, almost nine. He added impact players. I think going out and getting Tyler Toffoli, who's got 8 goals, 7 assists and 15 points in 17 games is huge, right? Add so much depth. Didn't really subtract anything. Spent a lot of picks, right? It was a pricey deadline. But he has term. He's got 2 more years at a great cap, right? Mm-hmm. No, he's not going anywhere. Then you go out and you're like, hey, we need another, like, just do it all player. And this is where I think Ron Francis, you know, steamrolled Brad a little bit in the Cali Yarncroke deal. Second and a third for Yarncroke is a crazy high price. I love the player though. He's now playing third line center. He does the weirdest thing where he'll switch the stick mid face off. It's whack. But you know what? It gives us more depth. But the biggest thing I'm impressed with the Calgary Flames is they improved without subtracting. They didn't give up a top prospect. Jacob Pelche won AHL Player of the Month or whatever. He's having an insane year down there. They didn't give up Juuso Välimäki, who's been struggling after injuries. They didn't give up Matthew Coronato, who Harvard just went to the Frozen Four. I'm pretty sure it was Frozen Four. I think it was. So they gave up a futures. They gave up a first, a second, and they gave up 2/3 and a fifth for Carpenter. That's not bad. And you added 3 players that are going to help you, right? And I think in the offseason, you're going to recoup some of those picks when Sean Monahan is eventually moved. He was on the radar on a lot of teams. He was rumored to be Boston. He was rumored to be a couple different situations. So I have the Calgary Flames as my first winner. And that's great for me to say, because they've been losers for so many years at the deadline. Adding like a small defenseman, that's it. So thank you, Brad Treliving, for finally making me pumped up. And the best thing that he did is he knew he was a buyer and he knew the LA Kings were interested in Toffoli, and he got out ahead of it, ahead of the deadline, paid the price, and did it. That's what's awesome.
Yeah. No, I support that completely. Flames were on my extended list as well because they did I think all the right things, and you may hear me harp on this a little bit, kind of the conversely of what I was screaming about with Florida, is they got out ahead of the things. They went for Toffoli. They didn't wait to the deadline. They brought him in a couple of weeks earlier, so to avoid that rush. Now, sometimes if you do that, you do kind of set the tone, you set the market, but They got a great player for them to fill a need that's going to be very helpful. And he's effective and it's already working out. And then they added some kind of depth and quality pieces, guys that are going to make an impact on the team, especially in a long playoff run. You need to have that depth. It needs to be quality. And it's the perfect time. The trade deadline is a perfect time to boost your bottom six and your depth defensemen, because those are the guys that you're probably going to need to shuffle around come playoff time. Either somebody's banged up or tired, or you need to mix something up. And locker room guys. And, you know, Toffoli seems to be loved wherever he goes. Just works out so well. And in a lot of ways, you give up picks, but nothing really impactful. Things that can be recouped. And for a team that is relatively young right now, doesn't need next year's draft and the year after the way some other teams do. So, yeah, no, I fully support that. Flames were on my list. And, yeah, kudos to you, buddy. It must be nice to feel good about your team.
First time.
My first winner, I want to talk about, because I have crapped on these guys extensively, especially kind of somewhat lately. Our last trade related episode, I crapped on them maybe too much. So I want to give some credit where credit is due in my mind, and that's Philadelphia Flyers. They did exactly what I was hoping, and I think worked out best, is they kept Giroux around until he played his 1,000th game there. So we got to do that in front of the Philly fans who presumably love and appreciate him, it seems. It was just, you know, that kind of bookend to his story there, I think, is perfect. And then they moved him to a team that, you know, he wanted to go to for a price that really still helps the team themselves. And they moved out some other pieces to kind of put them further along in what is going to be a rebuild. So I want to give them credit for kind of basically doing right by Claude Giroux, who deserved it, as far as I'm concerned, on all accounts. They did the right thing there. And they assessed themselves accurately. We're not there. We're not that good. Let's try to get ourselves there faster by giving away talent, but getting back picks that's going to help them get there in the long run. So not much more to it there. I looked at it, I thought, you know what, the Flyers deserve credit because they did kind of what I thought they should do. And whenever somebody listens to me, I like to point it out and I like to say thank you. So,
you know, what's crazy about the Philadelphia Flyers is, would you be shocked if they just like spend crazy amount of money in the offseason and try to re-kick it right away?
Not at all. No, I wouldn't be surprised.
They have some great pieces. Like Provorov has not played well. Travis Sinehem has not played well. Carter Hart, I don't know what's going on. You still have Travis Konecki. You know, maybe get a good head coach. That'd be nice. You just got Owen Tippett. Like, you've got a ton of picks. The only picks you don't have are second rounders. And this year, you're just like basically flat. But next year, in 2 years, you have three third rounders, 2 fourth rounders. If a year following, you have like you have ammo to get good, really good, like really quickly. Right now, the problem is, what's the proper way to rebuild? Right. I definitely think they passed because I think. The Giroux trade was Jerome Iginla-esque and Joe Bomeister-esque, where it was like, hey, here you go to the team you want. We just want you to win. Right. And he had the final say, and they gave him exactly what he wanted. And that's awesome. So you can't be mad at them. And it was a great, you know, great last game. Your last game is your 1,000th game. I don't know what's with this year and 1,000th game players getting traded right before the deadline. Ron Francis is a dickhead for what he did to Mark Giordano. You know what I mean? Like, it's his 1,000th game celebration, and then you healthy scratch him. So I have my own feelings towards that. It just felt weird. It just felt fake. It just felt like it wasn't genuine. So it is what it is, even though I like how he got, like, the thing got narrated by his dad. That was really nice. But yeah, I don't have the Philadelphia Flyers as a winner, but I definitely do have them as a really good team that did well.
To piggyback on that, yeah, Ron Francis is a dick because that was ridiculous. But I will say the package having, like you said, that was really nice. That was a really nice touch. But yeah, come on. Come on, Ronnie, get it together.
Ronnie. Nobody likes you, Ronnie. I don't know how you got that job. Whatever. I'm going to go to my second winner here, and this one is going to stay in the Pacific Division, and it kind of piggybacks off my last loser. I have the Anaheim Ducks as my second winner. Like, this team went from, like, under Bob Murray, who now works with the Flames. I'm just plugging the Flames today, hardcore. Holy cow. But works for the Flames, even though he did bad things and his, he got fired. I don't know. All of a sudden, he got a job really quickly. But, like, they have a ton of picks. Two first-rounders this year, two second-rounders this year, three second-rounders next year, three second-rounders in 3 years, plus a couple of fifths and a couple of thirds. Like, they are set. Plus, they already have a great prospect pool. They have Drysdale coming. Trevor Zegras is a human highlight reel who's going to be a star for years. Like, Verbeek, who, like, worked under Stevie Y for how many years, just, like, came in. He's like, no, we're rebuilding. We're doing it the right way. We're not going to, like, fool around on the edges. We're going fully in, and we're going to get a ton of picks. Like, this is like the Arizona Coyotes, where when they finally decided for the 800th time, yeah, maybe we're not going to win and we're going to just rebuild. But you know what? Good on them. And the difference between this, them and the Coyotes, is they have stars in the making. Jamie Drysdale is a stud, right? He's going to be really good. Hampus Lindholm's old D partner. They have Trevor Zegras, who's a stud, right? And so, yeah, I'm really happy. The one thing that I don't like that they did, and I almost took him out, and we'll talk about a bit, is the Dadnov deal. That just doesn't make sense to me, and we'll get into that. But yeah, I'm happy for Ducks fans who have kind of been in this limbo, weird, like, are we going for it? Are we not re-signing our captain? We're not really, you know what I mean? So good for Anaheim.
Yeah, I'm a little bitter that you named them, because they were going to be coming up next, and they were ones that a team that I was pumped on. But like you said, they when we go back into the fall and we were looking at teams and we were looking at projecting rosters, you know, pretenders or contenders, I believe, was the segment. And we had our good friend John on there. You were curious if the Ducks were a contender. I believe I accurately suggested they were a pretender, and that I was hopeful that they didn't kind of believe their own hype and blow it too early, and maybe think that they're there and think that they've got that product, that they're finally there. Let's trade away draft picks for good players now because we're there. No, they've fallen well out of the race now, and they correctly assess themselves that, hey, we are getting very close, but we're not there yet. We need a little bit more time, and there's a lot of players here that, you know, maybe aren't going to be a part of that. So what do? They trade enough players to bring in six new draft picks in the first two rounds. Six draft picks in the first two rounds in the next couple of years. That's huge. That's a big influx of talent that could potentially be there. And because of the way the team is right now, if they continue to develop, then in a year or two, then you can flip those picks for good players now to bolster that lineup. And then you've when you're almost there, you can take that shortcut, but you can't take that shortcut early. So I'm stoked. And then the Dadnov, yeah, that's another seventh or second round pick that they're, if this deal goes through, which it sounds like it's not going to go through, that's another second round pick that they've got. And they probably appreciate having the salary.
Yeah. And you think about it, they have Mason McTavish, who was drafted third overall. They have Jacob Pelche, who was drafted, I can't remember who he's drafted, but he's a same draft. They have Owen Zellweger or whatever, who was drafted in the second. They have, and Brandon Gould, they have like some nice prospects. Like, this team is like, you know, 2 years, you could see, hey, they're making the jump. They're with LA. They're, you know, up and coming. They're ready to go. They have the picks now that they can move out and get players, right? They have all this ammunition that they can use, which is awesome to speed up this rebuild if they chose to. Drafting players doesn't hurt.
Yeah. No, so big ups to the Ducks. And again, I mean, these guys must be listening to the podcast, because Flyers followed my instructions almost to the letter. Ducks took what I said to heart, assessed themselves, and made a ton of great moves. Tons of credit there. I'm going to throw out another team here as a winner that, again, these guys might be listening to the pod. They might have heard some of the things that I said and thought, God damn it. If Mitz believes in us, we believe in us too. That's Vancouver Canucks. Everybody had them painted as big sellers. Everyone was talking about what they're going to get for JT Miller and moving this guy out and moving this guy out. They did an internal assessment. They looked at things and they were like, no, you know what? Wasn't JT's not the problem. Bounced their coach, bounced their GM, brought in some talented people that know hockey and can have fun. They're in the hunt for a playoff race. Now, they're not Stanley Cup contenders, but when they actually let the players play and play to their talents, they're there. The locker room seems to be getting along great. JT didn't want to go anywhere, despite the fact that people love to talk about Vancouver media being horrendous on players. JT had no interest in going. I'm happy here, he says. So JT stuck around. What did they do? They get rid of Travis Hamonic, who was, by all accounts, the team, the players were super stoked that they don't have to see him anymore. Good old Pierre McGuire in Ottawa gave him a third-round pick for Travis Hamonic. And then they turn around, they swap that pick. But they bring in Travis Dermott from Toronto. Not a superstar player, but all in all, they recouped a third-round draft pick. They saved money. They got a better player. They got rid of a guy that was not working in their culture. Vancouver Canucks improved themselves. They didn't blow things up and do the desperate thing. They made small tweaks. Look, they're not going to contend for the Stanley Cup this year, but they've got one of the best goaltenders in hockey. They've got a ton of talent at forward. They've got some talented defense. They made a mistake a couple of years ago thinking that they were on the cusp, and they weren't. And I feel like they've actually righted the ship where if they continue to develop and draft well and play well, they can be a contender in a couple more years, maybe even one or two. So I'm just saying, I think the Vancouver Canucks, I think they're a winner by not being a loser.
The Vancouver Canucks, where would they be if they had this management group and coaching group at the start of the year? It's a high-flying offense. High-flying. They have Thatcher Demko, who is a stud, right? Like a stud. Yeah, I think the Oliver Ekman-Larsson trade, if you could redo that, Dylan Gunther is playing unreal. I think you'd rather keep that pick than have Oliver Ekman-Larsson. But yeah, I think Vancouver did the right thing. Travis Dermott's great. I can't believe how many people hate Travis Hamonic, though, right? Like, that's crazy to me. I know in the Flames, he did the same thing. There's a fiasco, and there's some medical conditions in his life that actually are serious, and he's been through some stuff and has lost his dad and all that kind of stuff. So I get it, right? And his daughter has a condition, but like, there's a lot of hate there for a guy, you know what I mean? Like a lot of hate. So if you could just clear that area out and somebody take the full contract plus give you a pick, then you switch it for Dermott, that's a win, right? So yeah, I agree. But you know what, Matt, I'm going to tell you who the real winner is. The biggest winner, the Uno champion. I don't know Spanish, but that's my best interpretation. The Montreal Canadiens are the biggest winner. I get it. Everybody's like, yo, what about Mini? They added Fleury, right? They added an eighth defenseman or seventh defenseman, but what about them? No, Kent Hughes is a baller. Kent Hughes came in as an agent and straight up swindled these guys like he's been swindling contracts for years. The guy got a second round pick for Brett Kulak. He plays 6th, 7th D. He's not that good. Like, he's good, but he's not that good. Like, he's good enough to be in the NHL, but he's not that good, not for a second. That's a top prospect. He got a first for Ben Sherratt. Ben the freaking wagon Sherratt. He got a first plus more. He got a second for Artemi Lehkonen, who they weren't going to re-sign. He cashed in on Tyler Toffoli. You know what else he did? He hired Martin St. Louis, where we were all skeptical and we didn't know what it was going to be, and that has lit a fire in Cole Caulfield.
Yep.
Yeah, the Montreal Canadiens are now loaded with picks. They don't have Kotkaniemi, who they messed up. Bergevin messed up on that draft instead of drafting like I don't know, Brady Tkachuk, right? They're ready to go. They have a ton of picks. They have 2 first-rounders this year, 2 second-rounders this year, 3 third-rounders, 3 fourth-rounders, 2 first-rounders next year. And then it just goes on and on and on. They are loaded. Like, this team is ready to go. And they have a chance to get Shane Wright. They're not going to take long to rebuild, especially with Jeff Gordon and Kent Hughes at the helm. Good for Jeff Molson for finally getting rid of that stud steroid-using Mark Bergevin, who drafts crappy people, even though they're under investigation and been charged. Good for them. Good for the Habs fans. This is awesome. I did laugh at, like, they were like saying somebody was going to take Shea Weber's contract, which I think is hilarious. And if somebody does, I don't understand the NHL. Like, I get it that you want the cap space, but still, like, I don't know. But yeah, Kent Hughes, Kent frickin' Hughes is my winner, which is via the Montreal Canadiens.
Man, the Habs flew under my radar, but damn, if the way you lay it out, I'm on board. They knocked it out of the park. That's huge.
Thank you.
I still think for my case, I think the Ducks are the biggest winner. So we've talked about them, but I'm going to say this team is arguably the biggest winner, because what they did increased, in my mind, their chances of winning the Stanley Cup this year. Unlike some other teams who looked like they were on track, and I think they threw a stick in us, folks. Tampa Bay, winners are going to win. What did they do? They just, in the offseason last year, they lost their stud third line. So what did they do? They went out there and they just added third line players. They paid really reasonable prices, and they brought in good third line depth players because they have all the top end talent. They have the best goaltender in the world. They have a team full of Stanley Cup winning experience, back-to-back champs. They did what you're supposed to do at the deadline, which is bring in depth increasing players, grinders, character people. To me, Florida fell hard, and Tampa Bay, especially compared to Florida, stepped up huge. So I think Tampa Bay, they didn't do it flashy. They didn't do anything crazy big. They weren't in on any of the major deals. That's not how you win Stanley Cups. So to me, that's why I'd say, in a lot of ways, Tampa Bay Lightning improved their team. They let their biggest opponents screw things up, and they're just going to keep on winning. Keep on collecting cups.
Yeah, I love what Tampa did. I do think that Brandon Hagel price was just insane. Like, I get it. And I remember people thought the Blake Coleman price, when he traded a first round pick for Blake Coleman, was insane, right? So I just know that Hagel's shooting a 22% clip with Chicago, and he's getting good minutes. He's not going to be the same player in Tampa. He'll be a good player. I like the Nick Paul ad more than I think I actually like the Hagel ad. So, yeah, Tampa's the real deal. They know what they're doing. They don't need to add Giroux. They don't need to add Ben Chiarot. They don't need to add any of that.
No. Right?
They know exactly what they're doing. So, good on Tampa. Good. I think our winners are all spot on, all 6 of them.
Yeah. I think the only thing that is unfortunate for Tampa is that, and for anybody that didn't listen, please go back and listen to our last 2 episodes where we mocked out the Stanley Cup playoffs. Coming out of the East, we picked, spoiler alert, if you haven't listened, go back now, pause, stop what you're doing, because it's a big, huge spoiler. We picked the Pittsburgh Penguins to come out. Now, that sounds crazy. Listen to what we said. I promise you, you'll be on the bandwagon. Penguins added a great piece.
What a steal.
Like, I feel so much better about that prediction.
Yeah.
After trade day, I'm looking around and I'm thinking, Boston wasting money, wasting time. Toronto, man, they were this close to my losers list. I mean, overpaid for Gio, who's not going to be that. I don't think he's going to be impactful for them. I love Gio, but guy's 108, well past his prime, and you gave a bunch of your picks up to pick him up. And they tried to bring in some goaltending help.
That backfired.
And it got sniped. What are you thinking? So now they've got, was it Colgren? Colgan? I don't know. And Mrazek.
You got three hurt feeling goalies. That's what you got.
Oh, man. So everybody, so many teams in the East, I think, hurt their stock. The Lightning solidified themselves. And I think the Penguins took a step forward. Man, I'm excited for that. I think that's going to be great stuff.
Yeah, I think Raquel is the steal of the trade deadline. A second round pick and Anton, you know, who was it? Zach Anton-Reese.
Yeah.
And one other prospect, like, which really isn't that big of a name, is insane. Like Raquel is like 18 goals or something. I don't know. I know Calgary was in on him and Yarncrook. And when I saw the Raquel price, I like almost cried because I was like, oh my gosh, that is like they just stole him. Like last couple minutes of the deadline, there goes Raquel for a second round pick, which you sometimes see. So good on Pittsburgh in waiting. But I know that Anaheim, no way they were asking just a second from their rival, the Calgary Flames. So good on them.
Do you think that Minnesota improved their team?
Yes, 100%. 100%. Because I think you got Cam Talbot, who's a solid goaltender. They were in on Fleury before. And I think having Cam Talbot and Fleury as 1-2 is solid. It worked for Vegas for a lot of years. Cam Talbot does have injury problems. He's fighting something this year. I don't know if I love moving Kakanen. Like, that hurts. But I think for this year, where they're not in salary cap jail, right, which they will be next year, I think they definitely improve. Now, I also think that, hey, y'all need a center, and they haven't added a center. But, yeah, no, I had Minnesota as my top probably five teams.
I don't know. I couldn't put them on a loser list. I love Marc-Andre Fleury. I think he's wonderful, and he's a talented goaltender. But I don't know, like, if you put his resume, he's a better ad than Kaapo Kakkonen. But, like, today, right now, is he that much better of a goaltender? I don't know that he is. I know that he costs, like, 10 times as much. And I know that he's, like, 10 or 13 years older. But I just don't know if he's actually an upgrade. And between him and Talbot, I feel like you now have two number ones that are going to be never quite in sync because they're always going to be sharing the crease with each other. I don't know. I don't love it. And I think making it worse is that they basically paid the Sharks to take away a top young goaltender. You know, they've given him a fifth round pick and Kakkonen for a guy that is probably never going to play a game for you. It's just crazy. I don't know. To me, I can't hate on them too much because he's a good player and I like him, but I just don't think it makes any sense. I don't think it actually makes their team better. So, I don't know.
I want to piggyback off that. Vegas Golden Knights couldn't get any team to take Fleury, right? In the offseason, I think it was like a seventh round pick is what Chicago got him for.
It was
what was it?
Player, wasn't it? It was like, because I looked at that. Oh, man.
I think it was like a low, low pick. But then
it was nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Chicago got a first. Like, I like, we all have our opinions on Chicago right now. I almost had them where Anaheim was. I just thought they should have sold more, right? Mm-hmm. I thought they should have like accepted it a bit more. They have two first round picks, they have two second, like they did well, but like, oh, it's a second, but if they get to the Western Conference Finals, it's a first. So it's not quite a first, but still, like, good on Chicago because they didn't pay anything for him. So you basically got a free pick for, you know.
Yeah. I had Chicago kind of creeping up my winners list as well because I think that they did a good job of finally looking at themselves and realizing that they're not there. They're not going to be there. They're not one or two players away. They suck. And they were able to get a lot of prospects for what they were moving out. You know, it's it worked out well enough. I know Fleury wasn't really looking to leave then to go far. Minnesota's close enough, so he was fine with that. And it's going to make him play some meaningful games, which I'm sure everybody would prefer for the most part, you know. Yeah, they were creeping up my list. But then at the same time, every time I thought about the idea of praising the Chicago Blackhawks, I threw up in my mouth a little bit. And I'm just kind of choking on it a little bit right now, even thinking about it. It's still too early to say anything overly nice about them.
Yeah.
What I will say is that, at least in terms of where their on-ice product is headed, they finally took a good, long, hard look at themselves and realized that the truth of the matter. Now, if only they could take that same lens and apply it to their ownership and the, you know, ingrained structure that they've built up. So I don't know. But yeah, man. Sharks almost made it on my list just for the fact that they
stole a goalie.
Stole a goalie who, I mean, by all accounts, even if he's not like a super stud, is an NHL caliber goaltender, and they got a fifth round pick out of it.
Yeah, no, he's going to be a stud.
Yeah.
Kahnen's going to be a stud. I can't believe they moved him. He's a big goalie. I'm actually high on him. I'm high on Fleury and Minnie. I like mostly because I'm selfish in my fantasy reasons. That's awesome. But I can't believe the Sharks got and it goes back to our starting of this conversation. Edmonton fell asleep at the wheel. You have cheap RFA goalies that are going for nothing, and you just continue to want Mike Smith. Like, there's no big free agent goalies coming anytime soon. And if it's a free agent goalie, you don't have the cap room, right? Yeah. So it just didn't make sense to me. But hey, good on the Sharks.
Probably. We'll wrap this up, but I think we talked about it beforehand, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it, at least in some light. And I'm going to preface it with this. Is there a team whose future outlook has changed more drastically in the last 4 months than the Vegas Golden Knights?
I freaking love it. I love it. This team... like, and their fans say how hard done by they are. Like, they can't win. They can't get it. Are you freaking kidding me? You've gotten everything handed to you in a silver platter. You've stolen every freaking big free agent name because you sign them to stupid term and stupid amounts of money. You get rid of Fleury. You treat him like crap, even though he's like a fan favorite. You get rid of him for nothing. Then you go trade for Dadonov, who has 3 years left at $5 million. And then... you try to screw Dadonov, who has a 10-team list that was submitted. Also, NHL, what are you doing? How does Cap Friendly have that, who's not even paid by the NHL, and you don't? Like, good for Vegas. You deserve to be screwed. You deserve a little bit of pain because you just try to treat a player. How awkward is that for Dadonov now? He's earned the right to have that on his contract, and Vegas basically lies to the NHL, lies to these other teams and says, nah, he'll go there, that we don't have a list. Like, Vegas, what are you doing? You put yourselves in cap hell. You knew that when you traded Jack for Jack Eichel. You knew that. And now you're, like, mad that nobody's, like, helping you? Like, come on, buddy. There's a little bit of pain you have to feel. You can't keep taking all these superstars and then be like, nah, we'll get out of it really easily.
Two corrections I have to make. One, it's a golden platter, not a silver platter.
Sorry.
It's not even a question, but it does sound like, it sounds like from what I've read that Ottawa, who, you know, signed the deal that gave him the 10-team no trade list, may have failed to communicate that to Vegas in the process, even though it was filed accurately, it was filed fine. But you're absolutely right, because if Ottawa did do that, then, I mean, shame on them for being morons and just...
Do you believe that a team that's in cap hell right now, right? A team that can't get out, they're way over the cap. They want to re-sign Riley Smith. It was brought up constantly on trade deadline via, like, tweets of Elliott and all that kind of stuff. Do you think, like, and Dadonov's over here saying that his agent and the team knew. Right. So I don't know if I buy it. I just don't know. Like, they're like, it's just shady. It's so shady.
Well, it's ridiculous, because I think that one of the quotes was like, even in the locker room, somebody brought up like, hey, it sounds like you get traded to the Ducks. And he was like, I don't think so. They're on my list. Like, he was said that in the room, but how awkward is that? To find out that you got traded from, like, in that environment. Like, trades are already hard enough on these guys. And the way that they find out is usually through Twitter or TSN or Sportsnet. That, like, somebody walks up to you and, like, by the way, you don't work here anymore. You're going to work at this company. It's like, actually, I have a really short list of companies I don't have to work at contractually. That's one of them. So, I'm really glad I'm talking to this about you and not my agent or the team I work for or the NHLPA. Yeah.
And we've praised George McPhee for being a straight killer, like no emotional ties to players, no nothing. Well, oh, sorry that one of these got in the way. You treated Fleury like crap. Yep. You treated Ryan Reeves like crap. You basically tell everybody, Paul Stastny, you sign him to a long-term deal. Ah, see you later, Paul. We don't want you anymore. You know what I mean? Like, even Nate Schmidt, the same thing. The guy loves it in Vegas. Ah, see you later. You're out of here. We're going to go get the new shiny toy, Petrangelo.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad for Vegas. I feel bad for Dadnov because that's the most awkward situation that a player could be put in. He's earned the right to have a 10-team no-trade list. First of all, I don't know why he would say no to Anaheim. Like, dear Lord, like, that would be amazing. But he's earned that right, yeah. Right? And you know what? You traded for that player. You knew you were tight to the cap, and you traded for Dadnov, even though he had, like, the contract doesn't make much sense. But still, I with a team that treats players like crap on the way out and they're ready for the next thing, I don't buy it. I just don't buy it.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think it, it's hard to kind of reconcile all those facts without coming to those conclusions that clearly that these guys were trying to do something maybe a little shady. Maybe they said, oh, it wasn't, maybe a little bit of like, well, it wasn't officially submitted to me, so I'm going to proceed as if it wasn't at all, and hopefully it doesn't come up. You know, it doesn't go like
that. But how bad does it make your GM look?
Yes. But that's it. Like, that's the thing is that they're in a position now, like they are in such cap hell that they might not make the playoffs. And they're not talented enough right now to do it otherwise. Like they need their injured players. And that's the thing as well, is to a certain extent, they have fallen off because a lot of their better players are hurt.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. But, I mean, that's what happens. That's the situation you find yourself in when you trade away, like, every draft pick you can find, and you trade away every up-and-coming talent you can find for all good players right now. When you empty the cupboards, that's all you have. So, yeah, no, it's crazy to me that a couple months ago, I mean, preseason, we were picking them as a favorite in the division. And yep. I think a lot of people were. Even a couple months ago, they were rolling. They seemed like a lock. They were Stanley Cup contenders. Then they bring in Eichel, and it's like, wow, can the rich get richer? These guys are already rolling, already one of the best teams in the league, and now they just sit back and wait for Eichel to get healthy. Well, I'm trying really hard not to swear, but poor guy finally gets healthy after this ridiculous ordeal, barely escaping this loser franchise that Buffalo's trying, kind of turning it around, and, you know, Tage Thompson's great stuff, you know, Superfan Trev, don't yell at me, but they were basically garbage at the time, still kind of are. He finally gets out, he's going to a winner, all he has to do is worry about getting healthy, finally shows up to work, can't wait to get there. Where are all the stars I was supposed to play with? Oh, they're hurt. You're now playing with, I don't know, Jeff that we found outside on the sidewalk, and nobody else. I don't know. It's got to stink. I feel for him. It's got to be really difficult emotionally, like, to for him to get excited at this point, you know?
Yeah, I think next episode we should do a Jack Eichel. Is he cursed or not? You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be something. And we can go on for hours about it. I think Vegas, this is the karma that you know, you get. You keep poaching really good players, Petrangelo, all those guys. Eichel, you get Patches, you get all these superstars, and you don't care about spending the picks. You don't care about, you know, spending the money. You don't care about personal ties like Fleury, Reeves, all that. This is the karma. This is just what it is. And this is, you know what you say? You tell all these guys it's a business. Well, guess what? It's a business. And y'all are getting shafted because you traded for a guy that you probably shouldn't have.
Yeah. So you can be cutthroat in business, but you really shouldn't be reckless. You know, and that's unfortunately what they did. They got reckless. Quite frankly, the Dayton deal altogether. He's got no business on the team. That was ridiculous from day one. So anyways, man, we really beat the hell out of a lot of teams today. I think they deserved it, but.
They did.
Any parting thoughts to share, Ty, as we wrap this up?
Just follow us on Twitter. We're pretty close to over 200 followers on Twitter, which is sweet. We've never really begged people to follow. So it's nice that if you are listening to us and you are a follower, that we're slowly starting to climb. Some days this feels like a real grind and tweeting a lot and doing all that stuff and editing and on top, like we do it for free. And we love the input and everything you guys do. We don't get paid. We just do this because we love it. So give us a follow, let us know how we are doing. We appreciate all of you for sure. I definitely do. And thank you. It's awesome to this journey has been awesome so far.
Yeah, buddy. I agree with everything you said there. Please don't be afraid to like and subscribe. No, we're not talking about Wood Jerseys this time.
Sponsor us.
No, as Wood Jerseys is a sponsor, isn't interested in us. We get that. We're not going to bag you, even though we would proudly display your stuff on all of our podcasts, which you can also find on YouTube if you search Vincent Twiggs. So sure, Wood Jerseys. You want people that are more popular, more whatever. Maybe we're just not, that's fine. If you're not going to sponsor us, Wood Jerseys, we're going to stop talking about you. And I don't know. You'll just have to pay the piper then.
I love it.
Somebody asked me the other day, they're like, oh, when are you going to get Manscaped? And I was like, I know we don't have any sponsors and beggars shouldn't be choosers, but I would have stipulations that I was allowed to laugh and make fun of Manscaped while I read it. Sorry, Manscaped. Sure, you're having a good time. You're doing your thing, but. I can't do that. I don't know.
I get it. I don't know if I want Manscaped, but I kind of want Manscaped now.
I want their money. I just don't want to talk about their ball trimmer 2.0 and its velvety touch.
See, that's what I want you to talk about. Like, that's how I want to start our show, or like a middle segment of like Maddie talking. Okay, you know what? We're not getting into it. We're done. We're gonna.
We'll just be our special segment where like soft porn music starts playing. And I'm just like,
Manscaped.
I realized there was only one thing, so I reached out and I grabbed my ball trimmer 2.0.
This has gotten off the rails.
I refuse to end a show on the rails. You know that about me.
I know.
So now that we have firmly off the rails, I can very comfortably say thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Follow us, subscribe, like, do all those things, share us, all that fun stuff, yada, yada, yada. We appreciate you. Thank you so much. From myself, Mitz, from my pal Twigs, thank you so much. We'll see you next week at a regular time this time. Take care. We'll be right back.